From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our Southwest studios in La Crosse. Thank you very much for listening today. We are continuing our ongoing conversations on the role of race in our communities, and we're joined by some people involved in a very special project. There's a new fund at the La Crosse Community Foundation that is being established in order to help organizations working to build racial equity in our community. The fund is called the Black Empowerment Fund. Like I said, it's at the La Crosse Community Foundation, and I'm joined by several guests relevant to this discussion. First of all, I welcome Sam and Jean Skemp, who are the seed donors to the fund. Sam and Jean, thank you very much for joining us today.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
Jamie Schlegel joins us as well, who is with the La Crosse Community Foundation. Jamie, welcome back to Newsmakers.
Thanks, Ezra.
And Shondell Spivey, who is with an organization called BLACK, which is an acronym that stands for Black Leaders Acquiring Collective Knowledge. And Shondell has been brought on as an advisor to this project. Shondell, welcome back to Newsmakers.
Have me again.
So let's start with the founding of this fund. It started for very personal reasons. Sam and Jean, who wants to go first? Tell me about what led you to establish this fund at the Community Foundation.
Well, of course, you know, this has been a problem forever. Our Black friends have been abused and enslaved for 400 years, which is 400 years too many. And I don't know, at some point I just felt that, well, maybe I should put my money where my mouth is, and I thought it'd be good to start a little fund for them at the La Crosse Community Foundation. I was a little bit surprised when they had no such fund. At that point, when I called up a few months ago, I guess, but Jamie, under her guidance, we got one started, and then with Shondell's help, it took off, I hope. And so that's the beginning of it.
I've heard a little bit about your story and your personal connection to the issue of racial equity. Talk about how your granddaughter has been an influence over your understanding of racial issues.
Yeah, you bet. My granddaughter, Zoe Skemp, age 32, she at one point said, Grandpa, you're racist. And I protested. Then she sent me some information, which pretty well justified her her position, and it got me thinking. And then I went and read that book called The Waking Up White by Debbie Irving. And, boy, I tell you, that goes into the details, some of which I was already aware of, but that concreted them, you might say. So I don't know. I just felt I had sort of a moral obligation to, there was this big problem out there. Let's try to do something about it. And so we started this Black Empowerment Fund.
It's not uncommon in an area that's predominantly white for people, without intentionally thinking about it, but for people to have ideas or notions or assumptions that they don't know are racist. Do you remember what it was that made your granddaughter say, hey, I think that's racist?
I think, pure and simple, it was the thing called white privilege. I mean, let's face it. As the book describes, if you are white, you have white privilege, which literally almost puts you on a different planet than the blacks. It's ubiquitous, that problem. And so it's, in a nutshell, that's what it's about, white privilege.
Gene, when Sam first had this revelation, what was going through your mind? Did he come home and talk about it? Did he say, hey, you won't believe what our granddaughter called me?
You know, I don't remember him telling me about that, but I've always been interested in these issues. I years and years ago, I taught school in Milwaukee, and I taught mostly black students. They were little ones, quite young, first graders, But it was a wonderful experience, very valuable experience for me. As a result, I have always been interested ever since in the welfare of the black people, because I so thoroughly enjoyed the students and getting to know teachers, etc. So it is, and I, and then we moved to La Crosse. We were in Milwaukee a few years, and you know it was obvious there was a very small population here, and so I've been very happy to know that there's much more diversity coming into this city. It's good. It's very good. People here, many people, as I've said several times, are not of ill will toward black people. Some people probably are. I guess there are people every place where you can find that. But they really have not been exposed very much to diversity, and it's been very good for the community, I think. Very good. So, no, this has been great as far as I'm concerned.
When you, I mean, as you mentioned, a lot of this started with, or at least is closely connected to your relationship with your granddaughter, who's biracial, and the experiences that she goes through that you haven't been able to relate to as closely. So what have you been able to observe? Have you been able to see firsthand the kind of discrimination that a person of color endures, particularly black people in our community?
Well, I can think of one example, and I mentioned this to somebody else, but standing in line for a fish fry and sort of holding a position for my biracial granddaughter, who ultimately came in and joined me, and somebody behind us said to the end of the line, Rosa. So she heard that. I guess I didn't hear it because I didn't have my hearing aids in, but that upset her quite a bit. And it took a while for me to really totally appreciate what she had to go through with all that.
It's obviously a reference to Rosa Parks, whose refusal to get to the back of a bus launched certain aspects of the civil rights movement in a big way.
Right,
you bet.
Correct.
Wow,
bet.
What an experience to have witnessed. Do you remember how your granddaughter reacted in that circumstance?
Well, I didn't immediately. It took a while for her to relate the incidents to me. And she sort of implied, she thought I heard it, but I hadn't. And she didn't see much of a reaction on my part, which she was hoping for. And so it was maybe that's part of the reason she called me racist. That's about as far as I got on that particular issue. But thanks to her, I at least read the book, Waking Up White, and that sort of totally substantiated her concerns.
Well, it's a very interesting story. We've got all of the background information about the establishment of the Black Empowerment Fund at the La Crosse Community Foundation. We're joined by, you've been hearing mostly from Sam and Jean Skemp, the founders of that fund, the original seed donors. But there's a chance for the public to participate too. And we'll hear about that from Jamie Schlegel of the La Crosse Community Foundation. We'll talk to Shondell Spivey from Black about ways that gifts like this can be used in the community and some of the needs that exist and some of the advice that he'll be providing as the fund goes forward as well. And you'll hear it all right here on Newsmakers in just a moment. If you'd like to listen to part of this conversation that you might have missed or to catch any of our previous shows, you can do so on our website. It's WPR.org/newsmakers. If you'd like to take the program on the go, open your favorite podcast app. We're in most of them. Search for Newsmakers and hit subscribe. Our show continues in a moment. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. and it's Newsmakers on WPR. Thanks very much for listening. I'm Ezra Wall in our La Crosse studio. We're joined today by Sam and Jean Skemp, whom you've heard of, and they have gotten started the Black Empowerment Fund at the La Crosse Community Foundation. We're turning our attention to some of the details of that fund now. We're going to be speaking with Jamie Schlegel of the La Crosse Community Foundation and Shondell Spivey, who's with the organization BLACK, which stands for Black Leaders Acquiring Collective Knowledge. Thanks again, everybody, for joining us. And Jamie, talk about how were you first approached? When did you first hear that Sam and Jean were interested in getting this fund going at the Community Foundation?
I first heard when Sam called me up, and I do have a little bit of a personal connection with the Skemps, in that our current board chair is a close family friend, and so and neighbors to Sam and Jean Skemp for many, many years. So they've always been very involved in the community, incredibly philanthropic, and I was fortunate when they had this idea of wanting to particularly help in this interest area that they thought to come to the Community Foundation to bring that to fruition. So I was thrilled to get the call from Sam, and then to bring Shondell in to help bring this vision to life for the La Crosse community.
So Sam said that he wasn't able to find a fund with a similar goal at the Community Foundation. What did it take? How much maybe research, legwork, conversations with board members and others did you have to do to make sure that this was an initiative that you were equipped to take on?
You know, fortunately, there's not much legwork that has to go into helping people establish funds to meet their charitable interests. That's what we do at the Community Foundation. That's what we exist to do. We're made up of 250-plus individual funds that are as unique as the donors who created them. And so it's fortunate we have this infrastructure in place to allow individuals to create these unique funds for unique purposes. And, you know, it's a really personal process. And I recently saw a quote in another Community Foundation brochure, because we're one of 800 across the country, that it's Community Foundations that help put donors' grief or anger or compassion or empathy or words into action. And I think that this is the perfect example of doing just that.
So there's a way for the public to participate in this fund, and it comes in the form of the original donation from Sam and Jean is $50,000, and there's a matching funds additional contribution that the public is able to participate in. Talk about that, Jamie.
So we were as outraged as many people were across the country with the tragic events that happened with George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and many, many, many people before them and after them, but we weren't sure what to do to respond as a community foundation that was in our wheelhouse, that was a part of our mission and what we would do. And so, you know, when Sam called, we thought this is our time to make a stand, to use our voice, our privilege, our power, to denounce racism and discrimination in all its forms. And it isn't often that our board, this is where the board came involved, where our board says, this is such an important cause and such an incredible fund that we're actually going to support it ourselves. And we believe that it's so important, we should really invite the rest of the community to participate. And so that's when we decided that we wanted to grow the fund to at least $100,000 before the end of 2020. And that we would provide a $25,000 match to any community gift that's made to the new Black Empowerment Fund before the end of this year.
So if someone wants to participate in that, how would they do so?
They can simply just send a check to the Community Foundation with a memo that it is meant to go to the Black Empowerment Fund, and we will match those gifts dollar for dollar up to that $25,000 mark. Folks can also give very easily online through our website. You can click the big green donate button right on the homepage.
And what's that website?
It's www.laxcommfoundation.com.
Shondell, you're active in the community, bringing Black people in the La Crosse area together and working on causes to raise awareness for what they go through on a regular basis. When you see a story like this, when you hear a story like this, this must not be the first time when you've watched someone come to the realization of their own privilege, of the privilege of other people like them. What's it like for you watching people realize for the first time something that has always been part of your experience?
You know, honestly, when I think of this question and I think of my own personal experience, it's one of those like, yep, okay, thank you, about time. You know, you've had that awakening because the reality is my everyday lived experience, I'm constantly reminded of my Blackness, right? Be it through personal stories or be it through national news. It through various injustices or inequalities that happen, be it when I see young people and see what they experience and so on and so forth. So it's something that I've never been able to escape. And white folks always have the option to opt in and opt out. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's easier to opt out and not have to face the fact that our nation, right, has done harm to people of color and to Black people for so long, both from an economic standpoint to a social standpoint. Systematically, we've had policies and things that uphold, right, those inequities and that oppression. It feels good when somebody wakes up and says, you know what, I am a racist, and how can I actively engage in changing the system?
So when you first heard, well, tell me, how did you first become aware of the establishment of the Black Empowerment Fund?
Jamie reached out to me and told me she had a private donor. I didn't know who the donor was at first that wanted to start this fund, but she wanted my input and to kind of bring me in on the creation of what this could look like. And so obviously it piqued my interest.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, well, Let's see what this is about. And then, so we had conversations, and then we ended up having a large meeting with the Skimps. And that's kind of when I found out, a little bit before that, but when that meeting was set up is when I found out that it was the Skimps that was going to be setting up the fund. And then we just all met, was able to have a conversation. It was a really good conversation. And here we are.
Having been active in our community as you have, some things must have immediately come to mind that could benefit from funding from an organization like this or from a fund like this. What kinds of issues were there in the front of your mind when you heard about this donation?
There was quite a bit, right? One thing that we've been pushing really hard for and planning and trying to organize is getting a community center. And having a community center that serves as a central hub, so to speak, for the Black community and being able to connect them to resources that are helpful and that won't harm them. So there's a lot in that too, right? So there's that piece. And then just, you know, like there's a lot of organizations, you know, our organization do a lot of youth programming specifically for Black students. And dealing with Black identity and culture and race and things of that nature. We could think of a host of things. We have homeless youth out here. We have there's a lot that we could do.
There are organizations that one could think of in the area, nonprofit organizations that work on issues of poverty and mental health and education and all kinds of other needs. Those organizations themselves are not specifically geared toward the Black population in La Crosse, but some of the programs that they offer do touch some of those efforts. Are there organizations? I know your organization is specifically geared toward Black people. Are there other such organizations in La Crosse that are specifically geared toward the needs of Black people?
There is no other organization, to my knowledge, that is specifically geared towards Black people. Some of them are just Black by design, right? What I mean by that, you know, I think of I'm trying to come up with a good example for that. But really, they're just black by design, as in that population, like the black population is one of the most underserved populations nationally, but then also within the state of Wisconsin. So quite naturally, then those organizations then have to respond to black people's needs or not, right? And do it however they want to. Whereas our organization specifically is geared to the empowerment and elevation of the black community across generation, across economics.
The fund starts with $50,000. There's the potential for it to grow at least up to $100,000 with contributions and matching contributions from members of the community and from the community foundation. It could certainly grow beyond that, I would assume. $100,000 is a lot of money by any estimate, but it is certainly not enough to solve any of our major problems in our community. What do you think a goal might be for the future of a fund like this? Is a $500,000 something that's out of the question for this fund in the next few years, or even beyond that? What's it going to take to really make a dent on issues of racial equity in La Crosse?
For me, I would say it's recognizing it's more than just the money. The money is one caveat, right? It's one way of being able to fight systemic racism and white supremacy, right? But then there's also work that we all have to do internally, right? In our homes, in ourselves, at our jobs, to be able to address systems as a whole as well. And so I think we all have our part, right? Like for some of us, it's giving money and being able to say, like, I want to financially break a system or dismantle a system so that we can talk about equity and equitable rights. So, and when we talk about amounts of money, I mean, honestly, I could say I want, like, you know, $2 million and then we could solve all the world's problems, right? But that's really not realistic either. So if there is a price point, I don't know what it would be, that would, you know, get rid of 400 years of oppressive racism, systematic oppression, systematic racism, hate. But I think that those that can and are willing to give to this endowment and are willing to do the work on themselves and really truly help change systems, I think that's really important, and that's what it's all about.
Sam and Gene, as you're listening to this part of the conversation and thinking about this fund outlasting you, outlasting any of us, as Jamie suggested, what are your hopes with the future of this fund? What would you like to see happen? What kind of efforts would you like to see grow out of this donation?
Well, we've got a little bit of a list here, which includes Black Community Initiatives, Black Arts and Culture Programs, nonprofits with leaders who are Black, Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Training, scholarships for students who are Black. But I totally agree with Shondell that, let's face it, it's going to take more than money. You know, this white privilege bit is a big hurdle. So we're just going to continue to hope for the best.
As a person who, Sam, you talked about reading the book Waking Up White, which a lot of people have been encouraged to read in our community over the coming year. Gene, you mentioned your experience teaching in public schools in Milwaukee and the exposure to different cultural experiences that you had there. What would you say to people for whom this idea of white privilege is a tough pill to swallow? People who well, you know, I mean, there are a lot of people whose reaction to that phrase is negative, and they say they say, I've worked hard for everything that I have in life. How dare you call me privileged?
See, the word privilege means something different there. Completely. That's what a lot of people think of when they hear the word privileged people, you know. It just means that really as white people, we don't have problems and worries because of the color of our skin. But if you are a person of color, that's always there, that they have to worry about that. And we don't. And I don't think people think about that, you know, very much. So I think that's what's confusing sometimes with terminology, too, you know.
Absolutely. I mean, as Sean Dale pointed out, he has to, every day he's confronted with this type of, well, this problem because of the color of his skin. I mean, you talk to some of these people. Okay, you can ask any, you can ask any white person if, say, would you be okay with if suddenly your skin would turn black and you would go through life with the black skin? And I doubt if you'll get a yes from any white person. I mean, these black people go through a little bit of hell every day. So most whites have no idea what this white privilege really means. But it's out there in large quantities. I mean, let's face it. It takes, I think, you never appreciate it unless you, lived in a black's shoes for a while.
Amen. Amen.
Well, and with that, our conversation draws to a close. We've been talking about the Black Empowerment Fund at the La Crosse Community Foundation. Our guests have been Sam and Jean Skemp, who are the founders of that fund. Sam and Jean, thank you very much for joining us today.
You're welcome.
Well, thank you very much.
Jamie Schlegel with the La Crosse Community Foundation is with us as well. Jamie, thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Ezra.
And Sean Del Spivey of the organization BLACK, which stands for Black Leaders Acquiring Collective Knowledge. He's an advisor to this fund and an active member of racial equity issues here in our community. Sean Del, thank you again for joining us on Newsmakers.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you also for me, Sean Del.
And this is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall in our Southwest studios. Remember, if you'd like to listen to part of this conversation again or stream on demand any of our previous shows, you can find them all at WPR.org/newsmakers. If you'd like to take the program on the go, open your favorite podcast platform. We're on most of them. Search for Newsmakers and hit subscribe. I thank you very much. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our studios in La Crosse. Thank you very much for joining us today. And we're joined this segment by Adrian Lipscomb, who is a restaurateur in the La Crosse area, a chef of growing reputation, especially for those of us who have had her shrimp and grits. She owns the Uptown Cafe on the north side of La Crosse, and she is also involved in a wonderful project called the 40 Acres Project, which we're pleased to talk about now. Adrian, welcome to Newsmakers.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. So this 40 Acres and a Mule project, the first time that I heard about it was when you launched a GoFundMe that was sometime around the Juneteenth holiday, if my memory serves. Tell me how the idea first came to you.
Yeah, so, you know, there was a phenomenon that was happening in which I was a part of, but it was happening to a lot of my Black female friends where they were receiving money via Venmo from strangers, especially white females, and they were just given money. And I had received this experience through the mail, and I was like, what do you do with money? Like, what do you do with a check, or what do you do when someone wants to offer you money? And for me, I feel this responsibility, and especially that people are looking at me, that maybe I'm accomplishing something or they see me doing something that they want it to continue. You know, maybe it was a restaurant, maybe it was just me living my life, or maybe it could have been something bigger. And through that, and literally in one night waking up the next morning, this idea came to me on purchasing Black land and owning Black land and the ownership of really trying to understand what Black agriculture is in the Midwest, but also within the United States. And so when I started doing more research and talking to people about this idea and concept of, are we really understanding the Black influence on agriculture, what's happening to Black agriculture right now at this moment, which is just dwindling and dwindling down to less than 2% of all farmers are Black. What are we doing with this history? What are we going to do with this legacy? And so for me, you know, one part is really trying to establish that legacy in that standpoint of what's happening in agriculture today and what has happened through history, but also a leg point to bring back Black farmers in the United States.
And the 40 Acres Project derives its name, obviously, from the unkept promise of 40 acres and a mule, which some people have a more passing understanding of than others. Talk a little bit about where that phrase comes from and what made you want to sort of use it to inspire this idea.
With what was happening, especially back in the 1865s, after the war with Sherman, he came up with this idea. And this idea was literally by getting leadership together, Black leadership together, mainly reverends, some that were slaves at one time, and literally asking, what do you want? Because as they were traveling, Black freed slaves were following them by thousands. And one question was, what do you want? And one of those leaders stood up and said, we want land, because land became an identity and ownership, an entrepreneur opportunity for Black Americans to create a community. And so within that, over the gaining and ship of land, the general, he split it up into 40 acres, and then he gave them also a mule, which was a part of the war. They had so many mules left over. And so in that, these slaves that received the 40 acres over time were able to have their own land. And these 40 acres were once owned by masters over time, especially in the deep in the South. After Abraham Lincoln was assassinated and Johnson went into office, Johnson reversed it. And with that became a whole slew of problems of trying to get land back. More violence was happening. Slaves did not want to give up their land. There was a whole lot of problems. And when government came up with sharecropping, in which people were allowed to still live on the land, but the original owner, could have been even their own master, was the owner of the land, in which they, now the slaves, had to mandate our agriculture, the land, but pay the owner or the master back for, you know, sharecropping that land. So there was this, you know, over time, there was just this deep history. So given land and now taken back. So there's this whole, I would even say, resentment and through history that still talk about a reparation of the 40 acres and the mule.
When you talk about this center that you would like to create, what do you envision it as? I've read on your GoFundMe site that it's going to be Black owned. It's going to be there to preserve the heritage of Black foodways. Do you envision this like as an educational center where people can come, or is this like a working agricultural entity that is providing food for communities and so on, or some combination thereof?
All of the above. So when we talk about preservation, especially of Black agriculture and Black foodways, we're talking about study of and the history of and preserving of and also talking about interviewing and recording of information. Because, you know, I even say today, we don't know how many Black-owned restaurants are closing. We need to gather this information to try to understand who is out here, how are they being helped, you know, et cetera. Then you look at our agriculture. Like I said before, you know, Black farmers are less than 2%, and it keeps dwindling down. We have no record of their traditions on their seed keeping, on how they learned how to do agriculture over time, what they still grow, how long they've been growing this, how they attempted to grow. Is this a time that we could learn from them through recording them, through drawings and such, to understand how to grow? And then can we practice this? Can we continue this? Over time, especially during COVID, we've seen a huge uptick of Black people that want to learn how to farm. So this is an opportunity, for one, to get people interested back into farming. Also, the Black farmers that do exist, we have a lot of them that are over the age of 65. There is a lot of history, a lot of violence, a lot of loss of trust between the government and farmers. So how can we bring this back together to work together? And could this place be a sanctuary in which this could happen? And also a place of training and education for kids and adults so long. But also, we're talking about food, right? How does food move through our food chain? Our food chain right now is really suffering. In fact, I really call it broken. So how do we understand how our food goes from the ground to the plate? And that's not even just for everybody else, but also for chefs. So chefs have a good understanding about Black agriculture and Black food, and Black chefs can have a great understanding of where their food is coming from and how it's grown and then what to do with it.
So the GoFundMe has been up for a while. You're not you're still about $100,000 away from your fundraising goal, maybe a little bit more than that. But an exciting development is that you, along with the other groups and chefs and everything that you're involved in, you have been able to find an appropriate plot of land on which to carry out the mission of the 40 Acres Project. So talk about where that land is and sort of how you chose it.
So this is like so super exciting because, you know, when we talk about 40 acres, I really envision, especially really romanticize 40 acres. And, you know, through talking, through economic development, America Farmland and Trust, and other all different organizations, the question came up to say, does this have to be one piece of land? And it kind of blew my mind going, oh, does it really need to be one piece of land? Does it need to be all in one area? And when I thought about it, I said, no. You know, a lot of question I get asked all the time is it need to stay in Wisconsin? Can it be more in one place? And, you know, in reality, yes, it can. So one thing is super, super exciting about is that we are in contract for one piece of property, and it is in South Carolina, is on St. Helena's Island or in Gullah Geechee area. This project, which is really deep and true to my heart, is called the Maloma Project. And what we're doing is trying to build a Maloma Heritage Center, which will concentrate and focus on African Atlantic foodways. So that includes food from Africa all the way through the traditions of getting here to America. And that location, like I said, will focus on the kitchen. It will focus on the influences of African Americans and African Atlantic ways of food and how it has derived within our foodways. And so we have some really major players that are involved and partners that are involved that are really well-known chefs. We have Michael Twitty, who works in the period kitchen between the 18 and the early 1900s in kitchens. We have Mashama Bailey, one of the partners of the Gray from Savannah, who is highly involved into this project. We have David Thomas and we have Tanya Thomas, both chefs that are highly involved, and they're mainly over on that coast. And this is an area in which we will build that heritage center, but we'll also have an archival area in which we will focus on the preservation of foodways. We, on this acreage of land, we will also do practicing of different agricultural ways working within the community, to understand what can be grown on there. We also have ties to Africa, where we will be talking about seed sharing and visiting Africa to talk about different ways of how farming is happening and how food has been developed in a way. And we will also have different sorts of kitchens from Africa that will be placed on this heritage site. So it's really exciting. It's really an exciting project to be involved with, and I'm very honored to be involved in that project. But we are still looking for land too, because we are talking about agriculture, and Wisconsin is a wonderful place to really start talking about it. It does have deep history roots when you look at African Americans and farming and agriculture through parts of Wisconsin, pretty much in the Midwest. That just changed after the Reconstruction era.
We're talking with Adrian Lipscomb, who is involved in the 40 Acres Project, which you've probably seen on Facebook and have heard about on GoFundMe. And there's still an opportunity for you to participate in that if you find the 40 Acres Project on Facebook and on GoFundMe. Adrian is also the chef and proprietor of Uptown Cafe on the north side of La Crosse on Caledonia Street. And our conversation continues in just a moment. If you'd like to find out more about Newsmakers, you can do so on our website, which is wpr.org/newsmakers. There you can stream on demand previous episodes of our program, and you can contact us as well. If you've got an idea for a show that you'd like to hear in the future, or a question that you'd like us to find an answer to, again, that's wpr.org/newsmakers. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. It's Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall here in our Southwest studios at the University of Wisconsin La Crosse. Adrian Lipscomb is our guest for this portion of the show. She is the chef and proprietor of the Uptown Cafe, and instrumental in the 40 Acres Project. Adrian, are you the founder of the 40 Acres Project, or did you just get the GoFundMe going, or how would you say that?
Oh, I founded it.
Okay, good. You're the founder of the 40 Acres Project, and that's perfect. You talked about the idea of you've got one location set. You're working with another organization on the location in South Carolina, but you also said that you'd be very open to the idea of an extension of the 40 Acres Project existing here in southwestern Wisconsin as well. So as you kind of look at the sort of 40 Acres dream state, if you will, you know, 5 years, 10 years down the road, or even farther, what do you see? What do you hope for that effort to become?
I really hope that this effort really becomes a conduit. And being that there's a lot of different types of organizations, and especially that help African Americans through farming, but also there's other organizations that help farmers that don't know how to contact African Americans or trying to be farmers. And I think this is an area in which we can become a conduit to work with other organizations to kind of drive that education and also that trust and create that sanctuary in which we can work together to become a part of the system, which has been, you know, we've been left out for so long. So this is just an opportunity for that. And, you know, in bigger picture is to have a walking through system that people can walk in and kind of understand where this agriculture came from and where Black agriculture came from and where is it going, but also feel like they can be a part of it and find education and training to be a part of the system, if it's in ways or if it's in the agricultural.
I'm thinking of your role as a restaurateur in town in La Crosse. I know you must be one of the first African American women to own and run a restaurant here in town. And I'm trying to think of what you said earlier about finding ways for Black farmers and others to be involved in the supply chain. You talked about the quality of the supply chain. As a restaurant owner, you talked to me before our conversation began about using fresh ingredients, about cooking everything from scratch. Are you even able to find suppliers for your restaurant that are Black farmers or even minority farmers?
You know, so Black farmers, no, there's not that many here in Wisconsin. And I believe like out of our 65,000 farmers within the Wisconsin area, there's only 65 black farmers, and none of them are in the La Crosse County. So, you know, so I don't have access to black farmers. I have access to Hmong farmers, which I use readily, that are available here, and then other farmers that are available here. And we have deep conversations that do talk about black farmers, or if they know black farmers. So a lot of the black farmers that I do know or I've heard of is by word of mouth. And excuse me. So this, you know, you can see that there is this need. When you talk about our food chain, especially at the time of COVID, it's really in shambles right now, between distributors and between what happened with farming. Because you got to think about it, when COVID started, we had a lot of farmers that had just planted. They took a gamble. And the farming economics is very, very, very risky. It is a risky business because a lot of farmers take loans out to buy tools and buy seeds and such to plant, to make that gamble that they're going to have good crops, that they'll be able to pay back the bank, but also keep their land at the same time. So we have a lot of issues within our farming economics that, you know, and as an outsider that looks at it, it has a lot of questions about it, but also the understanding of the distribution of food and that farmers do play a major role. So having a farm-to-table restaurant shouldn't really be elite. It really should talk about that all our food comes from the ground and it goes to our plate. So farm to table is happening everywhere. It's just where it goes between the ground to get to your plate, becoming the between distributors or coming from a farmer's hand. And I think we really have to realize, especially being in this beautiful area of organic farm, that we have a huge luxury that we definitely need to take advantage of, but also to support, to make sure that they stay around. So farmers are very, very, very important when it comes to a restaurant tour like myself and a chef like myself.
The 40 Acres Project information is available online, and of course you're still fundraising. Why don't you take a minute to tell people how they can find what they might want to know about the 40 Acres Project and maybe even donate if they'd like to?
Sure. Please feel free to, one, you can either contact me, come by the restaurant at Uptown Cafe at Caledonia Street, or you can go and check out, you can Google on GoFundMe, 40 Acres Project, where you can find a lot of information, or our website, which is 40acresproject.com. And you can always send an email via at hello at 40acresproject.com. or through the GoFundMe, and I respond. It may take me a moment, but I do respond to everybody who emails me. And also keep an eye on our Instagram. It is 40 Acres Project. It has up-to-date information, and we post on a daily, two or three times a day on the Instagram. But feel free, if you ever have a question, you can definitely reach us through email. And also, if you feel that you want to donate, but via email, via by mail, people have been donating an email, mailing it to the restaurant.
All right. Adrienne Lipscomb is the founder of the 40 Acres Project. She is the chef and owner of Uptown Cafe on Caledonia Street, as she mentioned, in La Crosse. Adrienne, thank you so much for spending some time with us today on Newsmakers.
No, thank you for the invite.
Absolutely. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall, and I want you to know that if you'd like to stream a previous episode, or if you missed part of this conversation that you'd like to hear again, you can find that on our website, which is wpr.org/newsmakers. There's several chances each week to listen to the show on the radio. Our show originally airs at 10 a.m. on Fridays on the Ideas Network, 90.3 in La Crosse. Then we repeat at 7 p.m. Friday and 5 a.m. Saturday on La Crosse's WLSU, which is 88.9. I want to thank our producer, Dawn Jewell, also John Davis, and the rest of the La Crosse staff for all the help that we get from them each and every week. I'm Ezra Wall. Please join us again next time for another Newsmakers right here on Wisconsin Public Radio.